So what I think of as fiber is probably different to what you think of as fiber. And there's a lot of issues with how we're measuring fiber. So we're still kind of stuck in crude fiber realms. But crude fiber values are completely bonkers. Like they don't really mean anything. Because when we're measuring crude fiber, we're just measuring like a portion of the insoluble stuff. We're not really measuring any of the beta-glucans, rhabnoxylans, pectin polysaccharides. So those values are like not even slightly telling us how much fiber is there.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
bioMérieux is a world leader in the field of diagnostics for more than 60 years. From pathogen detection to genomics and data applications, bioMérieux helps poultry manufacturers going beyond the test results.
You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins.
AB Vista offers pioneering products and technical services tailored to the poultry industry to help them succeed. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high quality, safe, and sustainable way.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show. Today I am here with Dr. Natalie Morgan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. Like I watch these podcasts a lot, so it's awesome to be on it and feel like a chicken celebrity.
It's you. It's you finally. Yeah, you're the celebrity of the day. I love that. So before we start talking about all things fiber, I want to hear, how did you get into chicken?
So I think I'm like quite a lot of people, we kind of fell into it. So yeah, like not at all from an agriculture background, very much a bit of a townie. Like I grew up just outside of London. But I always loved animals a lot. And I guess when I was a teenager, I worked on like a little petting farm for kids doing like cow milking demonstrations and pony rides and that sort of thing. And yeah, I really loved like teaching kids about where their food comes from, I guess, and like about animal production. So I guess that's how I ended up now lecturing about animal production. So I went to Nottingham Trent University to do animal biology so I could keep doing animal stuff. And I really loved the nutrition units the best. Ironically, I liked how black and white it was, like an animal needs this. We've got this in the grains. We just got to put them together, which obviously now I know it's not even slightly as simple as that. But at the time, that looked really cool. And I work in fiber, which is like the least black and white of all things you could do in nutrition. But they were just sort of setting up poultry nutrition research at Nottingham Trent when I was there. So it seemed like a fun thing to get involved with. And I really loved my professor, Emily Burton. So I kind of volunteered helping with chickens and then did my honors project with chickens. And then she was like, do you want to do a PhD in chickens? And I was like, well, I haven't got anything else on at the moment. So and then kind of fell into it like that. And then I met Professor Mingan Chokt at a conference in Norway at the end of my PhD. And I was like, if I get money, can I come to Australia and hang out with you? And he was like, yeah, sure. So then luckily AV Vista had funded my PhD and then they also funded my postdoc. So I was super lucky to have them. And I still do a lot with them now. So I went to Australia, told mum and dad, I'm only going for a year, don't worry. And now I've been here like 9 years.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I went to University of New England. So I was there for 7 years. And then I've been in Perth at Curtin Uni for 2 years. Because I wanted to do a bit more on the teaching side and sort of do more of a balanced teaching and research. And it's been cool because there was no chicken research at all at my uni. There was no chicken research in the whole state. So it's been really fun having to set it up from scratch and build my chicken empire on my own. Yeah. So it's been really cool, like having to start from scratch, meet all the chicken farmers, sort of get students into chickens. So it's been an adventure and it's good. It's good fun.
One of AB Vista's core strategies is to give customers the flexibility to do more with less, which is a common theme among many companies and producers in today's industry. As a science-driven company, AB Vista has proven results to help our customers achieve optimal performance using customized programs with our core Phytase and Xylanase.
Yeah, building from the ground up is fun, but it can also be daunting. I mean, it's everything. It's the new show. It's you.
I know. It's true. No one can tell me I'm doing anything wrong, though, because I'm the only one.
Right?
And I don't have to fight with anyone for facility bookings. Or,
Yeah.
No, it has pros and cons. But been pretty crazy trying to do it all, but in a fun way.
Yeah, it's, I mean, enjoyable though, because it's new frontiers every day. You never know what's going to be next.
Yeah, definitely. And they're like, chicken.
So I want it. Chicken what? So I want to hear a little bit about your experience working in fiber. And you're right. Like, it's kind of, birds are not great at digesting fiber, right? So a lot of us just ignore it. And maybe that's not the best thing to do. So
yeah.
So how has this concept evolved? I mean, is this something we got to get people on board with? Or maybe you could just give me some info.
Yeah. So I guess it's kind of come from like people started adding up all the nutrients in their diets. And we're like, oh, it's not adding up to 100. About like, I think it was about 90%. So about 10% is all the stuff we don't really understand about fiber. So it's kind of come from that a bit originally. And it's just really like very confusing and complex term, fiber. Because when we're saying fiber, we're talking about like a heap of different carbohydrates. And they all have like some are goodies, some are baddies. So some like are anti-nutrients. They're causing like viscosity issues, like diluent issues, barriers to absorption. But then some of them are really awesome and they're doing really cool stuff. Like the fermentable ones are fueling the good bacteria. They're sort of controlling our passage rates so it's not too fast. And then there's some that are completely inert that are just doing nothing at all. So it's really like, people ask me like, what should I formulate my fiber levels to? And I'm like, I can't tell you that because it's not just about the total number, it's about what type of fiber it is that you've got there and how soluble it is. It's like super, it's not just a value that like we can put on a lot of other nutrients.
Yeah.
And also the way people are interpreting fiber. So what I think of as fiber is probably different to what you think of as fiber. And there's a lot of issues with how we're measuring fiber. So we're still kind of stuck in crude fiber realms. That crude fiber values are completely bonkers. Like they don't really mean anything. Because when we're measuring crude fiber, we're just measuring like a portion of the insoluble stuff. We're not really measuring any of the beta glucans, rhabnoxylans, pectic polysaccharides. So those values are like not even slightly telling us how much fiber is there. So it's trying to get everyone to shift away from using crude fiber as a measurement. NDF and ADF are a little bit better, but they're still not great either. Like they don't really measure much of the pectic polysaccharides. So particularly for things like legumes, soybean meals, though they're not measuring the fiber that's in there. And then, so we really need to be measuring NSP and lignin, but NSP are very difficult to measure. They take a lot of time. You need like the specialized equipment. So I've done a lot of NSP measurements in my time. I was a little lab gremlin because I was developed an NSP database. It takes like 5 days to prepare 11 samples and then 2 days on a GC. So it takes like 7 days basically to get 11 values. And I did like 400 for my database.
Oh my gosh, I love that. That's dedication.
I was a little lab hermit. People don't have that time and those resources. And my database is online on the Poultry Hub Australia website for people that want it. But obviously, I've only really measured Australian ingredients, and there's so much variation between ingredients, even within Australia. So it's super hard for people, I guess, to access that NSP information. And then as well as that, it's not just measuring the total NSP. You also need to know what bits are soluble and insoluble. So, and again, there's pros and cons of both soluble and insoluble. So, the soluble ones, they're the good guys that can be fermented and used. Obviously, the bad side is, like I said, like the viscosity issues is a big one if you've got too much. And then obviously, that comes with increased water intake, litter issues, all that sort of side. But yeah, like I said, they're really fermentable and they can fuel that beneficial microbiota. So they can be really good. And then the insoluble side, the same. They can be diluents and physical barriers, but they're also good at stimulating the gizzard, again, helping with tract flow. And some of the insoluble stuff can be solubilized, particularly if you've got like enzymes in your diet. So
yeah,
it's really hard. It's hard to measure them, hard to know. Yeah, it's not as simple as just this is what we need.
Yeah. So there's people from all over the world listening. So what are the main feed ingredients in Australia, and what's kind of sitting in that database if someone wants to reference?
So I've got ingredients from all over the place. But obviously in Australia and Europe, we're mainly using wheat-based diets. So those sort of diets have got a lot of soluble NSPs in them. And they're also high in insolubles as well that can be solubilized, as I just said. Whereas the corn and sorghum-based diets, they're low in soluble NSP. And the NSP that's in them is also really complex and has sort of very complex structures, which means it doesn't respond as well to NSP enzymes as our wheat-based diets. In my database, I've got ingredients from all over, but I guess our main focus has been on trying to get the wheat side used more. But we have been doing quite a bit of research at the moment looking at adding fiber to corn and sorghum based diets. So putting in that fermentable fiber to kind of get those good properties, get that fermentable fiber in there, sort of get the microbiota having a better fiber using capability, and then getting that better response from the enzymes, getting the microbiota to produce its own enzymes so that we can use the NSPs, particularly the xylan, better in corn and sorghum. We've been playing around with that quite a bit. And I did this little study with one of the integrators here in Australia where we got a bunch of diets from all around Australia, like from their different mills. And it was like super crazy how variable the diets were. Like, even though we were all doing like wheat-based diets, like the same country, it was like the solubles were ranging from like 5 to 23 grams per kilogram in the diets, even though they were like the same. And the insolubles were like 60 to 140 grams per kilogram, like huge variation, even in one country for the same sort of diets. And we also found that generally everyone's focused on the soluble, like because we care most about viscosity, but we found it was more the insoluble NSP that were correlating with the FCR values that the farm was getting. So yeah, like me myself, I've always been like all about the solubles, but it proved that the insoluble was also having a big impact and that maybe we should be focusing on that a little bit more as well.
Yeah. So how can you correlate some of these different ideas about fiber, especially from maybe the dietary source, if it's grain and or other, if it's added in? How can we correlate or use this in broiler production or layer production or poultry in general?
So I think, well, the biggest issue at the moment, I guess, is that people aren't really measuring the fiber that's in their diets. And that makes it very hard for us to sort of understand what's going on, because like published studies, no one really measures the NSPs. Like I said, that some people measure crude fiber, but that's bonkers. It doesn't really tell us much about it. So that's kind of the biggest thing. And also people aren't really measuring the enzyme levels in their diets necessarily. And so like obviously with most substrate enzyme relationships, you can easily like measure this is the substrate in it, this is the end result. But we can't do that with NSPs. Like we don't really know what's going on. And all we can really do is measure the NSPs in the diet and kind of get an idea of like, if we measure the constituent sugars, what's in there and what's coming out. But my sort of main baby at the moment is oligosaccharides. So we've been trying to use measuring oligosaccharides as like an indicator of sort of what our enzymes are doing, how they're breaking up the fiber in there. So then kind of go backwards to see what sort of NSPs we had in there originally. So when our enzymes are with our NSPs, they're breaking up into sort of different size, smaller sugars, so our oligosaccharides. So we can get an idea there. If we measure what oligosaccharides are coming out, what sort of, like how good our enzymes are doing, I guess, like how well they're breaking up our NSPs. And we've been playing around with that, measuring. We're mainly looking at xylooligosaccharides and xylanases. So we can use that as an indicator of how well our xylanases are doing and how susceptible the xylan in the diet is to our enzymes, to try and, kind of work out what's going on and like what diets, why different diets aren't responding as well to xylanase as some of the others.
So how are these enzymes changing? I know oftentimes when the company formulates the enzyme, it's a cocktail, or they might find that a different level added to the diet might work better than another. I mean, there's the baseline level, but then nutritionists kind of might play around with these different enzyme inclusion rates as long as it's cost effective, right? So if you want to use enzymes in your diet, how do you approach that? Because of the cocktail, you don't know which one's doing the best, right?
Well, yeah. And I've also done a little bit with NSP cocktails, like just making my own little cocktails. And yeah. I found like super variable stuff. Sometimes it's having an awesome effect. Sometimes like they're better separately than they are together. Like they're upsetting each other, or they're making substrates that are upsetting the other one. I did a study where I just fed like a bunch of different commercial diets with different main ingredients. And like the sorghum diet was worse when I put the NSP cocktail in than when I just had xylanase. But then the wheat and corn, it was better in the starter, but then didn't do anything later on. So even in just my own little trial, like I found cocktails like were so variable. And so, it's really tricky because we don't, cocktails is a tricky one because you don't know, and you need to think more about what the NSP levels in your diet are. And if we haven't got that, then we can't really work out what cocktail we need. The main thing is that we need to know what NSPs are in the diet, and then also have a look at what oligosaccharides are coming out when we're putting those in, because it's the oligosaccharides that we want. Those are the good guys that are going to feed our beneficial. We don't want to go all the way to single sugars because they can cause like osmolarity issues and all that side of things. So, we really want to try and get the good guys being made.
Whether it's the birds doing that or enzymes, it doesn't really matter as long as something happens, right?
Yeah.
So what's some of the latest research? You mentioned that you've done work with different substrates, making sure you know what the NSP and then maybe finding an appropriate enzyme is. I know there's got to be a lot more going on than that though, right?
I guess the key things at the moment, like I said, putting fermentable fiber into diets that are low in NSP to see if that can sort of get the bacteria going, really get it more and more of the fiber degrading bacteria going, getting that sort of heightened short chain fatty acid production and reducing those pathogenic bacteria. So that's a big thing that we're doing at the moment. See if we're putting things, I've been mainly playing with wheat bran, like putting wheat bran in corn and sorghum-based diets to try and improve the microbiota and then get them responding to xylanases better. We've also the oligosaccharide stuff. So that's a big thing, as opposed to relying on the birds to make the oligosaccharides themselves, making them and putting them in. So we found that we did a little pilot and we found that actually making them for them was better, because then you're not relying on how much xylan's in the diet, how susceptible the xylan is, how good your xylanases are. Like we know that they're always going to get that consistent supply of the oligosaccharides. So I've done a lot playing with oligosaccharides. Xylooligosaccharides are my favorite thing in the world at the moment. So we've been playing. So looking at the prebiotic effects, but then there's also this new term floating around of stimbiotics, where it's putting oligosaccharides in, and as well as being probiotics, like directly fueling the bacteria, they're also having like stimulating properties. So even in really low amounts, they're sort of stimulating the bacteria to produce their own NSP degrading enzymes. So if we're putting xylooligosaccharides in, like we're seeing more endogenous siRNAs being made by the bird. And obviously that's sort of getting siRNA used better from the diet and also having more of that beneficial bacteria. So it's cool having both. So not only are they just feeding, like being a fuel, they're also stimulating other stuff to go on. So yeah, that's kind of the new fun thing at the moment. And we did a little like holo analysis looking at everyone that's put xylooligosaccharides in the diets. And we saw some cool stuff like where having xylooligosaccharides was reducing mortality in birds, like those that had it had lower mortality and also better FCRs. So everyone's sort of seeing that same thing. We think it's because of that whole having both prebiotic, symbiotic, and then especially if you've got xylanase in as well with them, you've got like even more xylooligosaccharides going on. You're breaking up the anti-nutrient effects of xylan and having all that cool stuff from the xylooligosaccharides happening.
You've mentioned this a few times that the type of fiber might correlate with the feed conversion ratio. Can you maybe expand on that a little more or explain how that relationship might work? If you know.
It's super tricky because, I said, we see a lot of variability even from the same diets, but even in the same ingredients, like the soluble and insoluble is changing so much. Even in soybean meal, it can range from like soluble can range from like 5 to 9 percent dry matter. And then insoluble from like, 8 to 15, 16. So even just in that one ingredient that we've all got in all our diets, like there's still a huge variation in the NSP. And obviously a proportion of that's arabinoxylan, beta-glucan, whatever. So it's really hard at the moment. Like we don't, like I said, people aren't really measuring NSPs in their diets that they're testing. So we can't even like gather all the information from everyone's studies because there isn't really any NSP levels being measured. So at the moment, you can't really get any strong idea of like, this is the soluble NSP level that we want or anything.
Oh, sure.
Just because, we don't have enough information at the moment about it all. Like I said, at the moment, we're trying to really look at, it's not just the total amount that's in there, it's the type that you've got in there and it's understanding what's soluble and what's not. So you can guess like what's going to be fermented and then try and work it back from there. But yeah, it's super hard at the moment. So everyone starts measuring NSPs more. It's difficult to know, what we're aiming for.
Exactly. Maybe someday it'll be as frequent as some of the other easily done.
And I think trying to get better methods for measuring NSP. And I know like there's work going on in getting NIR values for NSPs.
Oh,
so
sure.
So hopefully not everyone has to be a little lab gremlin like me measuring them. Like I'm hoping there'll be easier methods coming in the future for measuring NSPs because that's what's hindering us at the moment, really.
Yeah. So would you say that that's probably the biggest missing component of practical diets is the lack of easily used methods that could determine this? So, a company would not be hindered basically by a 7-day result if they wanted to calculate.
Like I said, getting everyone's mindset into what fiber actually is and like thinking of it as NSP and lignin, not like, And the idea that if it's, there's always been that debate if it's a friend or a foe, but it's both. So like thinking about it in that terms and like how you can get the most out of it. And thinking, it is a source of fermentable fiber that the bacteria needs, not just a bad thing that's causing you viscosity problems. Like, and when we're putting enzymes in, it's not just about trying to get rid of the bad things. Thinking about it, it's also getting all those good things as well. I think changing people's mindset about what fiber is. But the biggest issue is, getting everyone to use NSPs and getting methods that allow us to be able to have a better idea of what polysaccharides we've got in our diets.
Yeah, methods development is difficult because number one is obviously repeatability and then access to machines or whatever is required. They can't be astronomically expensive, otherwise no one adopts it.
That's the trouble.
Yeah.
And no one wants to spend 7 days in the lab.
No. I mean, us weird researchers, that's fine. Yeah. But not for industry there.
And then you want an instant result. Like it's old news by the time we've done it.
So I know you work in poultry, but do you have any idea, is it growth conditions or other that might make the fiber and the different analyses, insoluble versus soluble, so the range so wide in some of the grains or legumes? Like, is that the main predictor, or is it something more genetic related?
So from what we, like our little studies here, it seemed the growth conditions, because some of them are using the same sort of varieties, but like there's a lot of climate variability in Australia. Like Queensland's really humid, like Western Australia's really dry. So it definitely looked like it was a climate thing. I'm not so hot on agronomy, but yeah, it did seem, from our stuff, it did seem to correlate with where it was grown.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, it'd be awesome to see in other countries if they were seeing the same sort of things, or compare different countries' grains, like look at the NSP levels using the same varieties. Yeah. I think that'd be really cool to do in the future.
I'm sure there's probably an agronomist listening and they know the answer. We're just on the other side. Yeah. It's kind of insane how many different fields you need to do any part of agriculture successfully. Like we're not just in our own little chicken land. No. I mean, we need so many related fields.
Yeah.
To be successful. Yeah. So knowing that methods and other things are being worked on, where is fiber going in the poultry industry?
So like I said, hopefully new methods that make it easier for us to measure NSP, so we can get that data and look, as you said, look at the correlations between NSPs and performance a bit more, particularly new enzymes for like corn and sorghum-based diets would be very cool, I think. So focusing more on those very complex NSP structures. Obviously, I'm hoping the future is xylooligosaccharides because I love them. So I think there's going to be a lot more in that space. And we've been, in my little group, we've been playing a lot with looking at, like I said, the different size of the oligosaccharides. So does the microbiota have a preference for like longer ones, shorter ones, a mixture? So we've been playing a lot with making new methods for making oligosaccharides, but also measuring them as well, and thinking about purity and the structure of them and that side of things. So we're very keen on like trying to work out what is the optimum size oligosaccharides, and then I guess go back from that, like what xylanases are going to make those different specific sizes that we want. So we've been playing with that in broilers and layers at the moment. We've got a few studies running now, so watch this space. Hopefully we'll find out the dream size soon.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot more that can be done in the breeder space with fiber, because we know, like, obviously we use it as like a bit of a filler to make them feel less hungry, but it would be, I think we need to have a better understanding of which ones are swelling more or which ones are making them feel fuller and what it is about them, like specific, like the NSP content of them, what NSP levels would be best for the breeders. We've been playing in layers, but there's very little in layers about NSPs and oligosaccharides. Obviously, it might impact them the most because they live a long time. They get a very mature microbiota. So anything we can do to try and make their microbiota better, get them using the fiber in the diet better, would, I think, be really beneficial. And then we've also been looking a little bit at priming the microbiota in young birds, so that they're using fiber better when they're older. So if we establish that like fiber degrading microbiota when they're young, get sort of those xylan degrading bacteria mainly going, then does that mean when they're older, if we give them like a more high xylan diet, can they handle it better? Like, can they use it better? So there's been quite a lot of work in that space recently about this idea of priming the microbiota using oligosaccharides, and looking at the impact that has on when they're older. So I think that'll be a thing too. So it might be that we just need to give them like a boost of oligosaccharides when they're babies and then they're good to go. Or it might be that we need to feed it the whole time. And I think particularly when we obviously change the diets, we focus just kind of on the protein and energy when we go from like starter to grower and whatever. And no one really considers the NSPs, but it's like the microbiota has to adapt really quickly to the change in NSPs in the diet. And no one really knows what those NSP levels are. So it might be that feeding them that consistent supply of oligosaccharides, like kind of keeps the microbiota happy the whole time. Or yeah, it might be that we need to focus more on the NSP of our diets when we change them and like be more mindful of that. So I think that's kind of where the future's going, just having a better understanding of what the impact of the NSPs are and different sort of ages and different types of birds too.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting because there's different parts that need to be developed, you know, bird work, methods work, so supplements, enzymes, heck, world is your oyster.
Yeah, never boring.
Yeah, exactly. Well, is there anything else with the idea of fiber, like maybe some big ideas that we didn't touch on that you wanted to make sure you emphasized before we wrap up our talk?
Yeah, just hopefully people use NSPs and oligosaccharides a bit more in the future.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot that can be done in that space. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Behringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your partner for extra animal performance. At bioMérieux, we go beyond microbiology test results. As a trusted partner with 60 years of expertise, we've developed Augmented Diagnostics, a revolutionary approach combining core microbiology testing with the latest data and genomic methodologies. We help poultry producers measure and understand salmonella and other pathogens, detecting food safety risks on process and finished products, and leverage data to make better decisions across the whole production chain. Whether it's USDA, FSIS, and other regulation frames, bioMérieux helps you think 360 and optimize your food safety workflow. Go beyond a test result with bioMérieux. BioMérieux.
So before we wrap up today, we've got three questions that we ask all of our guests. So I'm going to ask you those three questions. And the first one is do you have a favorite poultry-related resource that you use?
I use the enzymes and animal nutrition one a lot just to get my head around. Yeah. Like I know the enzymes that I know, but I don't really know the others very well. So yeah, I think that's a really good resource for just like, yeah, I know xylanases and phytases, but what are the other ones doing? So I really, yeah, rely on that book when I'm teaching about that side of things and yeah, getting my head around what all the other enzymes are up to.
Yeah, exactly. Cause they're all in there together in their own little pool.
Yeah. So yeah. I find that one useful.
Do you have a favorite non-poultry related resource that you've been using recently?
So I do a lot of crafting in my spare time, like knitting and sewing and stuff. So all my favorite books are like knitting books.
Yeah,
so I've got I've been doing a knitting farm animals book at the moment. So I've been like knitting chickens.
Love that.
So it's chicken related, but knitting of chickens, which is way fun.
Have you been... Yeah, and I'm sure they're cute. What is the name of the British Olympian that knits?
Oh, Tom Daly.
Tom, yes.
Yeah, I love his jumpers.
love
that he's making knitting cool again.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I never want him to retire because I just want to see him
pump out those jumpers.
yes.
They're amazing. Yeah,
it's got to be grounding, just something that you know how to do. You can kind of turn your brain off and relax, and then you have
to,
something
like,
at
concentrate,
the end.
Not like I love knitting.
Yeah, that's amazing. The last question of the day is, for someone that wants to get into the poultry industry, what's your best advice to be successful?
Well, there's just like so many opportunities in the poultry industry. And I know, like, talking to my students, they just think it's like working in a chicken shed. But like, that's just one tiny little part of working in chickens. So I think I think it's important that we promote the industry as being like our sort of world, we're like, it's pure science, like very applied. And there's just so many jobs. So I think, and just having a go at everything as well. Like obviously as researchers, we do bits of everything. Like we're on the ground with the chickens, we're in the lab, we're writing. Like we have like a very varied job, which I love. Like I definitely couldn't do the same thing every day. So I think, yeah, just like we're all good at different things. And yeah, I think just give it a go. There's like so many options and so much variation in our job that, yeah, there's something for everyone.
Yeah, that's great advice. Not everybody can do the same thing, right? We all have to have our own little space.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today about fiber. I'm always happy to hear that. Someone else that has like extreme passion for their field. So thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me.
And for those of you listening, if you liked this podcast, give us a like and a follow so other people can find Dr. Morgan and her love for fiber.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.